Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update for Tuesday, January 19th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Coming up in this hour, we have quite a few stories for you. We will be reading several about the vaccine, of course, as well as some other interesting stories. Here are some of those articles we'll be reading in the coming minutes. COVID-19 vaccines might not be as effective against variant first identified in South Africa, researchers say. New virus variant may have been circulating in the U.S. before it was identified in the U.K., researchers say. No evidence that Pfizer-BioNTech shot increased risk of patients' deaths, says Norwegian Health Authority. Biden advisor says variants could turn the pandemic into a situation unlike we've seen yet. U.S. should stay focused on preventing COVID-19 cases, not changing travel restrictions, Biden advisor says. Widespread mask use can help stop virus outbreaks, study shows. French health minister warns against the use of fabric masks. We also have a Reuters report, scattered U.S. vaccine shortages halt some COVID-19 vaccinations. And a new COVID-19 challenge, mutations rise along with cases. That from the Associated Press. First, we'll check the numbers. Again, Ector County is not updating their numbers every day, so I'm getting this from the Texas Health and Human Services Department. These are numbers for Ector County. Confirmed cases, 6,547. Probable cases, 5,675. Fatalities, 267. Estimated active cases, 778. Estimated recovered, 11,177. The Odessa American does have ECISD daily cases. Today, it reads 6 students and 4 staff. The Midland Reporter-Telegram has a front-page article covering some of the metrics, and here are those numbers from the Midland Health and Department of State Health Services websites. Midland Health reported 259 positive tests for COVID-19 at its testing centers this past week, January 10th through the 16th. That's the lowest total going back to the week of October 31st when there were 214. The positivity rate was 21.8% in Midland, which was a drop of nearly 5 percentage points compared to the previous week, January 3rd through the 9th, and the lowest percentage going back to the week of December 19th. Looking at Midland Health CEO Russell Myers speaking last week, Midland Memorial Hospital's active COVID-19 cases dropped below 60 for the first time in recent memory. On Monday morning, that number had dropped to 51, or around 52% of the 97 rooms assigned for COVID patients. The percentage of COVID patients occupying total inpatient rooms at Midland Memorial Hospital also fell to 21%. That number is below the 7-day average, 25%. It also appears to be the lowest percentage at Midland Memorial going back to at least December 2nd. The percentage of rooms occupied at Midland Memorial for all patients on Monday morning was 74%, which was down from the 7-day average of 80% and down from 90% earlier this month. Lastly, the Midland-Odessa region also reported a rate of 11.76% of all occupancy from COVID-19 patients. That percentage is below the 15% rate that could bring in restrictions from the state and, as of Saturday, was the third lowest in the state. In fact, 18 of the 22 had rates above 15%, according to the Department of State Health Services. And there's also a short section at the bottom of this article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram that gives a picture of regions across the state. These are going to be the region report of hospital rooms being filled by COVID patients. In the Lubbock region, that is 20.08. For El Paso, 18.36. Austin is 16.54. San Angelo, 11.16. Those are just a few of the numbers from around the state at this point in time. And finally, with local numbers, the MISD has updated their dashboard. Midland Independent School District reports the total confirmed cases as 1,267. Cases in January are now sitting at 203. And then for Texas, these are from the Texas Tribune. Average new cases increased by 9 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 18th, 10,110 new confirmed cases and 695 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations in Texas increased by 461 patients compared with a week ago. As of January 18th, 13,858 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths increased by 26 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 18th, 46 new deaths were reported. These numbers are absolutely in line with what health officials were warning about as we were getting into the holiday seasons, that first you will see new cases dramatically increase, then you will see more hospitalizations as the weeks continue, and then finally, the death average rates also will go up. They lag just a little bit behind the other numbers. So as we get into January, further into this month, we are seeing some of those events play out as the health professionals were saying that they probably would. Before we get on with our articles, here are a few coronavirus briefs. The United States reported 137,885 new coronavirus infections on Monday, bringing the total to at least 24,074,657 since the epidemic began, according to Johns Hopkins University data. There were 1,381 virus-related deaths in the U.S. reported Monday. The total number since the pandemic began now stands at 398,981. We're fast approaching the 400,000 mark of souls that have been lost to COVID-19. The totals include cases from all 50 states. Insofar as the vaccine numbers, at least 31,161,075 vaccine doses have been distributed, and at least 12,279,180 shots administered, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. President-elect Joe Biden Jr. will attend a virus memorial event on the eve of his inauguration, and his team said he would revoke a Trump order loosening travel restrictions before it takes effect. New York City is expected to run out of vaccines by Thursday, mayor says. London's ICU workers reveal the grim reality of the UK's devastating second wave. Head of Italian Medicines Agency expresses grave concern over Pfizer vaccine delays. Storm grows around Australian Open as tennis authority refutes claims players are infected with COVID-19. Israel hits new record in virus cases as government mulls closure extension. Now here are some articles. COVID-19 vaccines might not be as effective against variant first identified in South Africa, researchers say, from CNN Health's Elizabeth Cohen. A coronavirus variant that first appeared in South Africa and has now been spotted in more than a dozen other countries might partially evade the vaccines, researchers said during a presentation Monday. We do now have very compelling data from both our labs and from many other labs around the world to support the fact that these mutations are problematic, said Penny Moore, associate professor at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases in South Africa. Researchers in South Africa and elsewhere are studying whether it can evade antibodies created by the vaccines. Study results are expected within the next week or two. The researchers are concerned because the vaccines target the spikes on top of the virus, and this variant has mutations in two different regions of the spike. When we see mutations like this specifically in those two regions, it's a strong indication that the virus has managed to evade neutralizing antibodies. Neutralizing antibodies are the types of antibodies that stop a virus from being able to infect a cell, Moore said. The coronavirus was thought to be relatively stable, but nearly 100 million people have caught the virus, and each time it spreads to another person, it gets a chance to mutate. It creates more opportunities for this virus to learn how to be resistant to the vaccine. Paul Bienais, a virologist at the Rockefeller University, told CNN last week. It's going to be over time likely chipping away at vaccine efficacy, but we're not going to fall off a cliff tomorrow. Such misbehavior wasn't expected from a coronavirus, Alex Segal, a virologist at Africa Health Research Institute, told CNN. This virus really showed us it can adapt and could be able to escape, he said. It just goes back to the first rule of virology. Don't underestimate your virus. New virus variant may have been circulating in the U.S. before it was identified in U.K., researchers say, from CNN's Maggie Fox. A new variant of coronavirus, first spotted in Britain, has been imported to the U.S. multiple times and was apparently already circulating before it was even identified in the U.K., researchers reported late Monday. Biologist Michael Worabi of the University of Arizona said he's found evidence that the variant, also known as B117, was imported at least five separate times to the U.S. and likely many more. It is striking that this lineage may already have been established in the U.S. for some 5 to 6 weeks before B117 was first identified as a variant of concern in the U.K. in mid-December, he wrote in a post on a website dedicated to sharing genetic information about the virus. And it may have been circulating in the U.S. for close to 2 months before it was first detected, on December 29th. Worabi also found evidence that B117 circulated in California without seeming to drive more transmission, even though scientists widely agree the variant is more easily transmitted, and even though the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention warned last week that it was likely to increase the virus trajectory in the United States. It's also worth noting that the vast majority, more than 90%, of U.S. B117 cases appear to be generated in these well-established domestic outbreaks rather than through travel-related introductions from the U.K. or other affected countries, though such cases are surely also happening. The CDC says it's had reports of more than 120 cases of the new variant in 20 U.S. states, and it's almost certainly far more common than that. No evidence that Pfizer-BioNTech shot increased risk of patients' deaths, says Norwegian health authority, from CNN's Amy Cassidy in Glasgow and James Frater in London. There is no correlation between receiving the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine and increased risk of death among 23 deceased patients who received the shot in Norway, health officials said Tuesday. The deaths occurred within 6 days of the inoculations, and the Norwegian Medicines Agency and the National Institute of Public Health are currently investigating the fatalities. At present, there is no statistical analysis that indicates that a coronavirus vaccination has led to an increased risk of death in the vaccinated, Sarah Vixmoen Wattel, chief physician at the Norwegian Institute for Public Health, said in a statement published online. The fact that an incident coincides with the vaccination does not necessarily mean that it is the vaccine that is the cause of the incident, Wattel said. While it cannot be ruled out that common side effects such as headache, muscle aches, chills, joint pain, and fever may have contributed to a more serious course of events for some patients, said Wattel, the deaths must be looked at in context. In order to be able to interpret this information, it is important to look at this as a whole. Nursing home residents have a very high risk of becoming seriously ill or dying from COVID-19 and have therefore been a priority group for vaccination, Wattel said. A large proportion of those living in nursing homes have serious underlying illnesses or are in the final stages of life. Life expectancy in nursing homes is relatively short, and we see that on average more than 300 people die in Norwegian nursing homes weekly, she added. The vaccine side effects are rare and usually mild, but they could include fever and nausea, which could be dangerous in very ill or frail patients. Pfizer said in a statement sent to CNN on Saturday that it was aware of the reported deaths and our immediate thoughts are with the bereaved families. Pfizer added it is working with the Norwegian authorities to gather all the relevant information. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, also said Monday that the deaths have to be put into context of the population that they occurred in. Fauci said that his understanding was that the fatalities followed the booster dose of the vaccine when there are more non-specific symptoms, such as aches, fever, and malaise. It is conceivable that when you have a very frail individual, such as many who are in nursing homes, that even that amount of stress to them could put them over the top, Fauci added. Biden advisor says variants could turn in the pandemic into a situation unlike anything we've seen yet. From CNN's Naomi Thomas. Michael Osterholm, a coronavirus advisor to President-elect Joe Biden and director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, said on CNN's New Day Tuesday that he worries that in the coming weeks, the coronavirus pandemic will turn into something unlike anything we've seen before, and most people don't realize that yet. We're going to suddenly see those variants come to play that, based on the experience we've seen in Europe in particular, South Africa, these variants can substantially increase the number of cases, Osterholm said. I worry desperately that in the next 6 to 12 weeks, we're going to see a situation with this pandemic unlike anything we've seen yet to date, Osterholm said, and that it is really a challenge that I don't think most people realize yet. When asked by CNN's Allison Camerota if there was anything that the Biden administration could do to prevent this, Osterholm said the first step is to get people to understand this will happen. We are going to see a major increase in cases. The challenge is how many. Secondly, he said, we can't make the vaccine go much faster than it is right now, adding that while he knows the Biden administration will do everything it can to move vaccine out, other actions are needed now. The difference is going to be, are we going to react now or later? Osterholm said. Like other places, he said that the U.S. will take dramatic steps to deal with the variants, but the question is, how soon will we do it? Do we put the brakes on after the car's wrapped around the tree, or we try to put the brakes on before we leave the intersection? That's the challenge, he said. I just don't know if we're really prepared to even have that discussion yet. U.S. should stay focused on preventing COVID-19 cases, not changing travel restrictions, Biden advisor says. From CNN Health's Naomi Thomas. Michael Osterholm, a coronavirus advisor to President-elect Joe Biden and director for the Center of Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, said on CNN's New Day Tuesday that the focus needs to stay on preventing COVID-19 cases in the United States, and he wouldn't change any current coronavirus-related travel restrictions. At this point, I wouldn't change anything that we're talking about in terms of restrictions. Let's take a look at them and see what's really meaningful, Osterholm said, following a move by President Donald Trump to lift coronavirus-related travel restrictions imposed on Brazil and parts of Europe. Osterholm said that the focus has to stay on preventing cases linked to currently high rates of new cases and hospitalizations. Keep our eyes focused on the ball, which is what's happening right here in the United States now, he said. Some background. On Monday, the White House released a text of a new executive order by Trump that would lift coronavirus-related travel restrictions imposed on Brazil and much of Europe starting January 26th. However, the incoming Biden administration said that the order would not be implemented, with incoming Press Secretary Jen Psaki tweeting, "With the pandemic worsening and more contagious variants emerging around the world, this is not the time to be lifting restrictions on international travel." Psaki added, "On the advice of our medical team, the administration does not intend to lift these restrictions on January 26th. In fact, we plan to strengthen public health measures around international travel in order to further mitigate the spread of COVID-19." Now, here are a couple of basic fact-related articles that apply to our everyday lives, and they're both about masks. Widespread mask use can help stop virus outbreaks, study shows, from CNN's Jessica Ferger. Widespread use of face masks in a community can significantly help prevent large outbreaks of COVID-19, according to a study published Tuesday in the Lancet Digital Health. The study is based on a mathematical model and looks closely at the association between self-reported mask wearing, social distancing, and COVID-19 transmission. Overall, the study found that a 10% increase in self-reported mask wearing could lead to a threefold increase in the odds of maintaining sufficient control over virus transmission in a community. Wearing face masks or face coverings in public spaces has been mandated by governments around the world to try and stem transmission of COVID-19. The aim is to provide a physical barrier that prevents the spread of virus-laden droplets. John Brostein, senior author of the study from Boston Children's Hospital, said in a press statement. However, past evidence on the effectiveness of mask use against COVID-19 transmission is mixed, and setting up randomized, controlled trials to investigate this is challenging, he added. Our findings, based on observational data, suggest a community benefit of wearing face masks for slowing the transmission of COVID-19. However, mandates alone might not be enough to increase mask use, Brownstein said. We recommend that policymakers consider additional strategies to evaluate and increase mask usage in order to disrupt the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. The study is based on data from self-reported surveys of more than 300,000 people in the U.S. between June 3rd and July 27th, 2020. Participants were asked to rate how likely they were to wear a mask while grocery shopping or visiting family and friends. The researchers used pre-pandemic data from Google Maps users to make estimates of physical distancing and then crunch the numbers. Self-reported mask wearing was highest among people age 65 and older, as well as Black and Hispanic people. Mask use also varied according to a geographical location, with the highest number of self-reported mask wearers found along the west and east coasts and southern border, as well as large urban areas. An important finding of this research is that mask wearing is not a replacement for physical distancing, and U.S. states that practice both at high levels had the best probability of controlling disease spread, co-author Ben Rader of Boston Children's Hospital and Boston University said in a news release. And now here's an interesting article about masks. This comes from Europe. French health minister warns against the use of fabric face masks, from CNN's Saskia Van Doorn in Paris. France's health minister, Olivier Véran, has cautioned the public against using homemade fabric face masks, as they don't offer all the necessary guarantees. Véran was reiterating a warning previously issued by France's health council. All masks which have a filtering power greater than 90% are valid. That includes almost all surgical masks for the general public, he said. Artisan masks that you make at home, with the best intentions in the world, respecting the official advice, do not necessarily offer all the necessary guarantees. Véran's remarks came in an interview with France Inter Radio on Tuesday, in which he described the country's COVID-19 infection rates as high but stable, with roughly 20,000 new cases a day over the past several weeks. Véran told the broadcaster that the 6 p.m. curfew currently in place was having an effect, but that he was still very concerned by the spread of the more transmissible COVID-19 variant first identified in the UK. France has registered 200 to 300 new cases of the variant a day. The minister was also asked about France's vaccination rollout for people over 75, which kicked off Monday, amid complaints that many have been unable to make appointments. He said the booking process is being streamlined, and added that as more doses become available, so too will appointments. There are over 900 vaccination centers in France, and more than 2 million appointments have been made for the first and second dose of the vaccine, according to Véran. Now here's an article from the Reuters agency. This is, I've been searching articles about the availability of vaccines as reports of some regional shortages have been reported. And this article is actually a few days old. It was published Friday, January 15th. Scattered U.S. vaccine shortages halt some COVID-19 inoculations by Peter Sesgley, Reuters. Scattered vaccine shortages cropped up on the front lines of the U.S. battle against the coronavirus pandemic on Friday, prompting at least one large healthcare system to cancel a slew of appointments of people hoping to be inoculated. The supply chain blips arose as the country struggles to speed up the pace of vaccinations, which totaled 12.3 million, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In New York, the country's most populous cities, Mayor Bill de Blasio said the city has vaccinated about 300,000 of its more than 8 million residents, but was on course to run dry next week because it was burning through vaccines faster than they were being replenished. We've been getting resupply right now at a very paltry level of about 100,000 doses a week, de Blasio said on WNYC Radio. We went through 125,000 in the first 4 days of this week, and our numbers are increasing every day. De Blasio has said the city would be on track to meet its goal of vaccinating 1 million New Yorkers by the end of January if it is able to get supplies. If there is no supply, we're going to have to freeze the appointment system, he said. That would be insane after all the progress that has been made. De Blasio, who said the vaccine supply should be allocated to localities commiserate with their ability to administer them, was among three dozen big city mayors who have asked the incoming Biden administration to send COVID-19 vaccine shipments directly to them, bypassing state governments. At least one New York City healthcare system canceled vaccination appointments and another suspended new ones. A Mount Sinai hospital spokeswoman said sudden changes in vaccine supply forced it to cancel appointments through next Tuesday, which would be today. While NYU Langone Health was not canceling appointments, it said it would not accept new ones unless we have a confirmed dose in hand or know it will be received by the time of the appointment, spokeswoman Kate Malanchik said. Supply gaps. Since the onset of the pandemic, the virus has infected 23.1 million Americans, about 7% of the population, killing 388,467 of them, according to a Reuters tally. The pace of new cases has risen since December to 235,766 per day on a seven-day average, while an average of 3,332 people are dying daily in what one model projects as the country's deadliest month. In one encouraging sign, the number of COVID-19 patients sick enough to be hospitalized has leveled off in the past 2 weeks, with 128,612 reported on Thursday. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo blamed the supply gaps on the federal government, which he said had cut supplies this week to 250,000 doses from 300,000 doses, while expanding the eligibility to include 7 million of the state's 19 million residents. They increased the eligibility. They did not increase the supply, Cuomo said at a briefing. Cuomo disputed de Blasio's prediction that the city would run out of doses, but acknowledged the city would sustain a cut proportionate to the overall state cut. According to the CDC, however, New York State has administered only about 757,000 doses of the 1.9 million it has received. In Oregon, Governor Kate Brown said a federal official told her the state would not receive additional vaccine supplies because the federal government has none in reserve. I'm demanding answers from the Trump administration, Brown said on Twitter. I am shocked and appalled that they have set an expectation on which they could not deliver with such grave consequences. Brown's comments followed a report in the Washington Post that the federal government has no remaining reserve of the two approved vaccines, one by Pfizer and one by partner BioNTech, and then the second from Moderna, which has emergency use authorization. Citing unidentified officials, the Post said the reserve, which the government said was initially set aside for the second doses that each vaccine requires, had already been distributed, starting in late December. Earlier this week, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar said the federal government would begin distributing the reserve to states, a position also taken by the Biden administration, which takes over January 20th. And that is your coronavirus update for this Tuesday, January 19th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and coming up next to take us up to 2 p.m. is the show Enabled. Following that, national news from USA Today. And then at 3, local news. Here's some of the articles our volunteers are reading today. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Dixon and board say selection was about academic improvement. Coronavirus. Statistics show drop in COVID metrics in Midland. Small Bites. FC Coffee Shop opens downtown. Wine bar and bookstore announced for micro market. From the Odessa American, vaccines begin later this week. Road work. Landgraf seeks Robin Hood shield. Board to take up Ector contract renewal. Those stories and more at 3. And then at 6, of course, the Wall Street Journal. Thank you for joining us today. We'll be back at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon at the same time. Again, thank you for joining us. Be safe and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 47 and mostly cloudy. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the low 40s. Then, tomorrow, a few showers with a high in the upper 40s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Thank you for listening to Enabled this week. You might think that life without ads would be absolutely ideal, but if you are a person who is blind or visually impaired, you are missing out on very important information, sometimes crucial information, that is presented visually in the ads. There is a person who is working very hard to get audio description for all the ads you might be hearing on TV. Her name is Sam Lateef, and here is what an article in Forbes magazine had to say about her. This comes from the website www.forbes.com. The headline reads, "The Power of Purpose, How Sam Lateef and P&G are Innovating to Serve the 1.7 Billion People with Disabilities Market." This was written by Afdal Aziz, and it was published in November of 2019. The article starts, "One of the most inspiring people I've had the privilege to interview is Sumaira Lateef. She is known as Sam Lateef, Procter & Gamble's company accessibility leader in the UK. Lateef was born with a rare genetic condition known as retinitis pigmentosa, or RP. This meant she could never see much through a narrow and blurry lens until, at the age of 16 years old, she could suddenly no longer read anything anymore. Passionate, positive, and engaging, Sam Lateef provides a perspective on how her experience fueled her career. Here's a quote, "My perseverance, resilience, and determination has helped me achieve anything I focus on in my life. My aspiration has always been to lead what I thought I wanted, a normal life. But to do normal things was incredibly difficult as a young blind person. Simple things like reading a book, crossing a road, being able to see the latest fashion or film was impossible to do. I focused on the few big things, which were important, like how to get through university, how I could work with others to become as independent and capable as possible for the things which really mattered, like finding a job. After a stint working for Arnold Clark, which is Scotland's largest car retailer, thanks to Mr. Clark himself, who offered her the job, she applied for a job at Procter & Gamble. Here's a quote, "I had previously gotten accustomed to routine rejections from large companies who would outright tell me that although I interviewed well, they were not used to employing a blind person and wouldn't want me to fail in their organization. After all, there's no way a blind person can operate an XLS file, or so the decision makers wrongly assumed. Thanks to the effort of Mike Bowden, an IT director who is actively recruiting disabled people into P&G, She was welcomed into the company, with Bowden even taking the time to reassure Latif's parents that she would be safe in London on her own. Latif's perspective proved invaluable to Procter & Gamble as she began helping the company rethink its entire approach to inclusivity. Here's a quote. "Now my manager and P&G's chief supply officer, Julio Namath, has been pivotal to encourage, support me, and enable me to explore accessibility for P&G. Julio has championed and supported my work, not least with our CEO and his leadership team. He promoted me into a new role as company accessibility leader, and I am P&G's first blind British Asian woman as an associate director." Latif's personal struggles with products fueled her desire to fix problems for people with disabilities. Here's a quote. "Now that I was a mum, I used many of our products, some with ease and others with much difficulty. I could never independently read my clear blue pregnancy test result, had a challenging reading the size of the Pampers diaper, differentiating between the Olay day and night creams, herbal essences, shampoo, and conditioners. I began evaluating our products in terms of accessibility. I had recently switched from using Ariel liquid detergent to Ariel pods and found this transition amazing, as I no longer was having challenges with measuring out or spilling the liquid detergent. I could just pop a pod into the washing machine. We touch 5 billion consumers around the world, and 20% of these consumers will have some form of disability like me." One area where Latif focused her attention was a common problem for many people. Here's a quote. "It dawned on me just how annoying it was to always try to find an elastic band to pop on my shampoo bottles to distinguish them from the conditioner bottles. I started wondering what P&G could do, as I knew there were millions of people with low vision in the world who must also be struggling with this." Latif's determination to solve this problem led her to focusing on solving it with a simple design fix. Here's a quote. "This year, in the U.S. and in Canada, we implemented tactile strips for shampoo and circles for conditioner on our Herbal Essences Bio Renew bottles, allowing people to be able to differentiate by touch shampoo from conditioner." Latif spoke about some of the other innovations that the company has made. She said, "We've launched Herbal Essences and Clear Blue on the Be My Eyes platform, enabling low vision consumers to video call us for hair advice and pregnancy test readings." Latif's work led her to convincing the P&G chief brand officer, Mark Pritchard, of the need to make the company's advertising more inclusive. Here's a quote. "We now include audio description on all of our TV advertising, enabling blind and low vision consumers to be able to hear a description of the visual actions, helping to paint a fuller picture of the action. The first advertiser to do this." Now, you'll be hearing more about this in just a few minutes in the next article. But in this article, Latif continued by saying, "More recently, we have designed a Gillette Trio razor," that's spelled T-R-E-O, "the razor for assisted shaving, which allows a caregiver to shave the person they're taking care of, so that it becomes easier for both. Mothers taking care of their sons, fathers taking care of their daughters, sons taking care of their elderly fathers, and wives taking care of their husbands. We've learned that caregivers like using the Trio razor on both men and women, young and old, for those living with conditions ranging from Down syndrome to Alzheimer's and much more." One of Latif's breakthrough ideas has been running disability challenges with senior leaders, helping them to walk in the shoes of a consumer or employee who has a disability. Here's a quote. "This brings to life the challenges and the impact that small changes can make to making our products more accessible. Combining the stats with an immersive experience, actually experience firsthand what it's like to use one of our products with a disability, this has been extremely insightful for our businesses. It's a no-brainer now." Latif has some parting wisdom for other leaders who may want to go on the same journey to make their brands more inclusive. She says, and this quote will end this article, she says, "I think more and more leaders and companies can and will embark on this journey. It's a win-win if you do. A win for the disabled consumers, who often have been forgotten. A win for business, as by making products more accessible, you increase the number of people who can use and buy your products. And a win for your organization, as employees love working on more meaningful products and services, where they see the real impact that it has on individuals. They become more passionate, more engaged, and are driven to a more successful outcome." As I mentioned a little while ago, here's more about the audio description in TV ads. This information comes from a website called thedrum.com. The headline reads, "The voice of blind people hasn't been heard. Inside the fight for audio described ads." This was written by Katie Dighton, who published on January 17th in 2020. When P&G's company accessibility leader decided to lead the drive for audio-described ads as standard, she was blown away at the ease in which brands can produce an inclusive spot for blind and visually impaired consumers. The real challenge, she soon found out, lay rooted in the technicalities of the broadcast world. Imagine there was a way to reach hundreds of millions more people with your TV ad by changing nothing at all. Imagine being able to speak directly to the 3% of the U.S. population previously neglected by every other brand. Imagine increasing your media spend by just 0.0001% to boost your audience, not marginally, but significantly. The magic strategy does exist, and it lies in the economics of inclusion. If a company produced an audio description of its next ad for British TV, it would immediately reach an extra 2.2 million people, the community of legally blind or partially sighted consumers. It's a group that has been catered to by Hollywood and TV studios for some time through a toggleable track that describes the content happening on screen. By law, American movie theaters must provide audio description and the headphone equipment to customers with limited sight. For instance, while the majority of Netflix's catalog can be watched with supplemental narration switched on. Yet advertising has, up until now, largely ignored the needs of blind people who cannot process a visual gag, a clever piece of cinematography, or in some cases, a brand's totally silent logo in the final shot. Ignorance of the issue is ingrained in today's TV ad industry, so much so that even those closest to the problem have not fully comprehended its repercussions until very recently. Sumaira Latif, Sam Latif, P&G's company's accessibility leader, has navigated the professional world without sight ever since retinitis pigmentosa rendered her blind before adulthood. But it was only when she was watching an ad for P&G's Flash in 2016 that she realized the entire creative ad would be lost on the people who had low vision. Here's a quote. "It's about a muddy dog in a clean white kitchen," she recalls. "He shakes off the mud and gets all dirty again, and he's singing Flash Gordon by Queen. That's the funny part. It's the dog singing. But I couldn't see that. I didn't get the joke. I didn't know what the fun was all about. That's when I got the inspiration to start making all our ads audio described. An audio described ad is visually identical to a regular spot. The difference just lies in the track that's played behind it. The original audio is played at a slightly lower level while a narrator describes the action not communicated by sounds and speech. This narration can comprise setting the scene, introducing the characters, such as by using the words the villain or a mother, or in the case of an Olay ad from last year, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and then explaining the movement of the cast in the ad. When an ad is audio described, Latif says, it suddenly goes from something unengaging to, as she says, something I am very interested in because it makes me feel part of a broader society. I can understand the ad like everybody else. Scripting an audio described ad is a difficult skill to master. Unlike in cinema, where scenes can roll on for minutes without any plot-altering action, the narrators of TV spots must clearly summarize every shot and storyline crammed into a 30-second spot, all the while doing everything they can to avoid crashing the original dialogue. Other aspects of communication have to be taken into consideration as well. In the U.S., for instance, the National Federation of the Blind advocates that audio description be used to provide access to critical information that is not already voiced. This is a quote from Chris Danielson, the organization's Director of Public Relations. This is at the National Federation of the Blind. The quote continues, examples include emergency alerts, phone numbers, product warnings, product names and brands, and other on-screen text that relays critical information such as symptoms, side effects, warnings, and other data. In the UK, audio-described ads are held up to scrutiny by an organization called the Advertising Standards Authority, or the ASA, according to its own guidelines. The ASA notes, for instance, that, quote, audio description should include any essential visual elements, for example, on-screen text, which qualifies spoken claims. But it's not necessarily bureaucratic mandates, such as these that have put advertisers off making audio-described creative ads. While the expense of making a separate audio-described track is, according to Latif, peanuts, she says, on the average 0.0001% of the overall media plan, marketers can be apprehensive about what it takes to make one, unaware that there are companies such as Deluxe Media, that's the name of the company, and BTI Studios that specialize in scripting, recording, and even automating narration. And demand for such advertising from the blind community has, unsurprisingly, been low. Here's a quote, no consumer is going to ask for an advertisement, admits Latif, so similarly, no blind consumer is going to ask for the description. But as it's P&G now doing the asking, things have started to change. Latif secured buy-in for audio-described ads from her employer, the biggest advertiser on the planet, by walking straight into the one place she felt the voice of blind people hadn't been heard, the boardroom. She put her case to Chief Brand Officer Mark Pritchard, who challenged her to audio-describe a P&G Thank You Mom commercial starring the blind Paralympian Lex Gillette. Here's a quote, within 24 hours we got the ad audio described and within a week or so we had put it out, says Latif. That really helps. Recognition at the highest levels of the company that this is fundamentally the right thing to do, to grow your business and to become more inclusive. Unfortunately, the audio described Lex Gillette ad was only available to watch online because the networks where the ad was airing didn't carry a separate audio description track. This is the biggest obstacle to airing audio described commercials. The quote-unquote pipes needed to broadcast a separate audio track are typically switched off by networks during ad breaks. This means that even if a blind person is watching TV with audio description switched on during the programming, they will not be able to listen in. It also means that even if an advertiser has produced an audio described track, there's no guarantee this will be broadcast on every network it has bought media with. A number of networks have overcome the technical issues associated with giving advertisers access to their audio description pipe. In the UK, Channel 4 now offers the service across commercial breaks on E4, on the channel called More 4, the channel called 4-7, the one called Film 4, and its flagship channel across the majority of the UK. ITV broadcast its first high-definition audio-described ad, a spot for P&G's Fairy Liquid, back in 2017. It has offered the tech to other advertisers ever since. Bill Brown, ITV's head of media standards, laid out the challenges involved with getting the capabilities in place. He says we had to carry out technical upgrade work before we could operationally deliver the new service, including conducting thorough end-to-end testing before going live. Secondly, management and process issues had to be addressed to ensure key stakeholders came on the journey with us and operational staff knew exactly what they needed to do. Finally, the other factor we had to guard against was ensuring we didn't introduce any significant risk into our end-to-end content supply chain. Sam Lateef has spent the last few years campaigning closely with the Royal National Institute for the Blind. That's abbreviated RNIB in the UK, which has been pushing brands to audio-describe ads on the buy side. Sonali Rai, the Institute's audio description technology manager, notes progress. In 2019, she says, John Lewis, Tesco, eBay, KFC, Asta, M&S, Innocent, and others worked hard to ensure that their TV campaigns were accessible for people who rely on audio description to enjoy TV. The RNIB in the UK appreciates the challenges in adding audio description to ads, Rai adds, but there is enough experience in the field today to start looking at creative ways to do so and make the content accessible for people with sight loss. A number of grassroots groups have been set up to make audio describe technology easier for both brands and broadcasters to implement. In the W3C community, the Audio Description Community Group, and something called Timed Text Working Group, both comprised of professionals from the media and supplier community, with the latter currently working to create an open standard exchange format for audio description. Here's a quote. The focus of the work is not specifically on any action plans relating to any genre of content in particular, such as getting ads audio described. Rather, it is on facilitating interoperability between tools across the workflow for preparing and distributing audio description to make it easier and hopefully cheaper to audio describe all content in general. This was a quote from Nigel McGitt, who is the group's co-chair and executive product manager at the BBC. Meanwhile, companies such as Don Bourne's transcribing company, it's called Take One, are experimenting with AI, artificial intelligence, to further cut costs for advertisers interested in audio description. This means a script could be voiced by a synthetic yet quote-unquote natural-sounding bot, eliminating the cost of a voice-over artist and speeding up the process. The U.S. market appears less enthused about turning audio-described ads into media buying standard. In its latest report to Congress on the current status of video description, the National Association of Broadcasters, abbreviated the NAB, addressed the topic of advertising only in the context of increasing revenues. For instance, asking whether audio description of more primetime shows would lead to more ad sales. NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, does not have a position on the audio description of commercials, a spokesperson confirmed. Anecdotally, not many audio-described ads appear to be reaching American audiences. Here's a quote, right now the only advertising I know of that is occasionally described with audio description is movie and show trailers, and this is rare, although Apple TV Plus has audio description for all the previews for its original content, says the U.S.-based Danielson. Quote, I have heard audio for description of a trailer come through a cinema headset exactly twice in all the time I've been going to a theater that routinely has audio description for the film that it shows. But now, P&G, Procter & Gamble, has proven its campaigning power in the UK market. American broadcasters may soon follow. the world's largest advertiser, is now audio describing all of its ads in the U.S. as well as in the U.K. and Spain, and is softly pressuring networks to, quote, have those pipes ready for when we want to send our content through them. We are on a journey to expanding and making this process sustainable, says Sam Lateef, but there's a lot of education work to do. Once the infrastructure is in place in the U.S., the U.K., and in Spain, there's the small task of opening up those broadcaster pipelines in every other market, or at least the other 177 countries where P&G products can be purchased. And then there's the monumental but necessary challenge of lobbying the disparate streaming industry. Despite its roots in digital, none of the broadcasters that this website spoke to confirmed advertisers could run audio-described ads on their proprietary streaming platforms. Facebook also does not have the tech built into its infrastructure. However, it is understood the network is looking into building such a system, having already developed automatic alternative text and custom alternative text on Instagram, which allow for people with visual impairments to quote-unquote hear a photo and its caption. It's a daunting task ahead for Procter & Gamble and Lateef, given the lackluster speed at which audio-described advertising has progressed so far. But she is determined to make it happen, knowing all too well what it's like to miss out on a shared cultural experience. And now she has a blueprint of action from her experience in the UK, work with local organizations for the blind, engage with broadcasters, and start the conversation among other advertisers. She ends the article with a quote by saying, "My vision is for this to roll out as much as possible," she says. "The challenge is not for Procter & Gamble not wanting to do it, but the fact that we really can't do this alone." Well, to summarize today's program, you heard about Sam Lateef, the accessibility leader for Procter & Gamble, and others like her in the advertising world. You found out they're working hard to be sure that you completely understand the ads that are part of your life through accessible advertising. To end the program today, I have a quote for you to think about. Here it is. "Doing business without advertising is like winking at a girl in the dark. You know what you're doing, but nobody else does." This is a quote from Stuart Henderson Britt, who lived from 1907 to 1979. He was a well-known professor of marketing and advertising at Northwestern University in Chicago. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today. Followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 68 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 68 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate healthcare option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. 686-8773.
Of all the interesting places in our country, the American West may just have the most interesting stories. Recording Library of West Texas volunteer Jack reads articles from Range, American Cowboy, and other publications on the Western Magazine Hour. Wednesday mornings at 11 and again Sunday afternoons at 5 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 47 and mostly cloudy.
Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the low 40s. Then tomorrow a few showers with a high in the upper 40s.
Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 2 p.m.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading articles from today's USA Today, Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. I lost my place there. On the under the money section,